This show is brought to you by Gobble by Kevin Carr, a Thanksgiving novelette of the zombie apocalypse, and you thought your family dinner was stressful. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Greetings, couch potatoes, across the country, around the world, on the radio and on the internet. I'm Kevin Carr, and you're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies. On today's Big Fat Christmas special, we're going to be talking about Passengers, Assassin's Creed, Why Him, Sing, and Fences. All pretty big movies this week. Well, because it's Christmas, and Hollywood likes to just dump everything out at the end of the year. I'm also going to be talking about some news, the trailer park, some box office predictions, and, of course, the home cinema roundup. But first, if you want to get in touch with me, you can email me at fatguys@fatguysatthemovies.com. You can leave me a voicemail at 740-205-6456. That's 740-205-6456. You can find me on the internet at fatguysatthemovies.com and facebook.com/fatguysatthemovies. And if you want to reach out to me on Twitter, I'm at twitter.com/KevinCarr.
Good evening. I'm Ron Burgundy, and this is what's happening in your world tonight.
Being the week right at Christmas, there's not a whole lot of movie news happening because pretty much the industry is sort of like Congress at this time. It takes off for weeks until January really starts rolling in. So there's a couple little bits of development news that I thought I'd throw out there. Denis Villeneuve, who, of course, did movies like Sicario, and then, of course, this year he did Arrival, which is getting a lot of buzz. I think he's a visionary director. And he's in the running to possibly direct a Dune movie, and I'm all for that. Now, I've been on the record for a long time actually being one of the few fans of David Lynch's version of Dune. And even when Jodorowsky's Dune came out a couple years ago and everyone was trying to convince people that that would be the best version, I'm like, I kind of liked the David Lynch version. I thought it was out there and cool. But I'd be curious to see what Denis Villeneuve does with this, especially with, and we'll talk more about this in the trailer park, with the new Blade Runner sequel that's coming out, to see what he does. Because, I mean, he is visionary. He is one of those few directors of the modern day that is actually visionary and could almost step up to the level of Kubrick. I mean, that's heaping a lot of praise on him kind of early in his career, but still, watch this guy. Another piece of news I saw is Expendables 4 will, quote, end the franchise in 2018, which made me think that's kind of interesting because I thought Expendables 3, along with Kellan Lutz and Ronda Rousey, already did that. But yeah, they want to continue making those Expendable movies, even though these guys are going to break a hip before they break more box office records. On the lesser important news front, and I'll talk a little bit more about this in the box office segment, there was an interesting bit of fringe news that hit my desk that I really didn't mention last week at all, but I just kind of have to address it. There was this dump Star Wars campaign that was going on online and mainly from very conservative outlets and like Breitbart, the guys from Breitbart News were, a couple of these guys were sort of spearheading this. And I found it so hilarious that it's not the first time that people have take an issue with films and saying they're too political. But to hold up the Star Wars, the new Star Wars movies in particular, first The Force Awakens and then this, as big feminist movies, you're sort of missing the boat because I've always contended that The Force Awakens isn't exactly a diehard feminist movie. They just stripped anything traditionally female off of Rey, and Rey could have been a guy. It's just the most androgynous role out there, almost as even more androgynous than the original Princess Leia, who had her breasts padded down in the first movie. So having Felicity Jones leading this group of rebels in Rogue One doesn't exactly make it a feminist mantra. I mean, it's just these are characters in the Star Wars universe, especially if you spent any time reading the extended universe stuff. There are female Jedi and female characters all the time in these books and role-playing games. So this is nothing new. First of all, it's not odd to take some sort of political message from Star Wars because these things have been racked in politics. There's Vietnam messaging in the Star Wars movies with rebels, and there's Nazi deconstruction that goes on in these movies with, of course, the Empire representing the Nazis. This is nothing new. So this dump Star Wars campaign, just because, you know, maybe a couple people had tweeted things. I guess Mark Hamill tweeted something out and the writer tweeted something out. the people who are involved in the movies, they can draw whatever they want to. And if this guy, Chris Weitz, wrote the script to be a certain way, that doesn't mean that's the reason Disney was making the movie. Disney was making this apolitically. But there's going to be some political stuff in there. Because look, if you're a conservative and you're going to say, I'm not going to see movies based on the politics of the people involved, you're not going to see any movies. I mean, I'm not even talking like Alec Baldwin or Susan Sarandon, but anybody. There are so many liberals in Hollywood that you can't see a movie without getting their view in there. That's just the way the entertainment industry is. That's like saying, oh, I'm not going to go watch a Broadway musical if the people involved are liberal. You just kind of have to get past that. That would be like, you know, for take a traditional conservative role, which is to say like investment banker, and say, well, I'm not going to put my money in an investment bank that has conservatives. Well, you're going to be hard pressed to find an investment banking firm that doesn't have at least a couple conservatives working for it. The politics behind the movies is ridiculous. And to try and boycott a movie, and it was a massive failure. Nobody boycotted this film. And to say that because it didn't make as much as The Force Awakens did is a victory is not a victory. And the whole thing about hope, there's a lot of talk about hope through the movie. And I know there are some people who are trying to tie that into Obama. It has nothing to do with Obama. The name of the movie, the original Star Wars movie, was subtitled A New Hope, like in 1978 when they decided to break it up into chapters. So hope was just leading into Star Wars. It had nothing to do with Obama. It had nothing to do with politics even. And it was about the name of the next movie. Another weird little political thing that happened recently is Wonder Woman has been stripped of her honorary ambassador status to the UN, which is ridiculous. I mean, I know people got upset, oh, she's a fictional character, but do you realize that like Winnie the Pooh was an honorary ambassador, like Tinkerbell was an honorary ambassador? For some reason, people are now have their backs up on sort of gender politics. And, you know, who cares? It's an honorary ambassador. There are like choirs and symphonies and just organizations that are honorary ambassadors. It's a symbolic job. And all it is to do is meant to foster goodwill. And I think it's ridiculous that there's anybody who would take umbrage with this. Let Wonder Woman be an honorary ambassador, for crying out loud. That's kind of the point of it. It's a recognizable figure. It'd be like if Superman were. Now, would anybody complain if Superman were? They didn't complain when Winnie the Pooh was. People, get your stuff together. It's Christmas time. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the trailer park. The first one I want to talk about is coming out very soon on January 13th, The Bye Bye Man.
If you say his name, or even think it, he'll come for you.
He makes us see things.
Don't say it, don't think it.
He makes us do things.
Don't say it, don't think it.
He spreads like a virus.
Don't say it, don't think it, don't say it, don't think it.
Bye bye, man.
What blows my mind about this movie is they're like, if you say his name, and if you think his name, you're gonna die. Well, then don't tell me his name. No, don't say his name. Don't tell me his name. But it's the Bye Bye Man. Oh, you just told me his name. This is the most easily avoidable carnage in a horror movie since The Ring. Just don't watch the videotape. The next one I want to talk about is one I am excited about, and that is Blade Runner 2049. It opens on October 6th.
Done your job once. I was good at it. Things were simpler then.
Like I said, I think Denis Villeneuve is a visionary director. And I've never been a huge fan of Blade Runner. I've liked it. I've seen it. And I appreciate it. And I have my own theories about Decker and how he relates to the replicants. But I think if there's anybody who was chosen to take the reins from Ridley Scott, Denis Villeneuve is a great idea. Because the original Blade Runner doesn't even feel like a Ridley Scott movie. It feels like a Denis Villeneuve movie. This looks really good. The set design, the cinematography, the music. This makes me excited to watch a Blade Runner movie. And they're getting in just in time for the Blade Runner real life anniversary, which is in 2019, of course. That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Assassin's Creed and why him. Take a seasonal trip to the zombie apocalypse. Kevin Carr's new novelettes, Not the End and Gobble, offer a new take on the zombie nightmare. In Not the End, a man wakes up from a coma to find a viral outbreak has sent the world on the defensive. He must escape and learn the true nature of the zombies. The story Gobble takes the readers back to the beginning of the outbreak, which erupts at a tense Thanksgiving dinner. Not the End and Gobble by Kevin Carr are available now. Only 99 cents in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited.
The Inquisition,
what a show.
The Inquisition,
here we go.
We know you're wishing that we'd go away, but the Inquisition's here and it's here to stay.
Oh boy, the Inquisition.
And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's jump right into the movie reviews, or should I say dance right into the movie reviews? Well, you know, there's a reason I'm playing that song, and that is because I'm going to be talking about Assassin's Creed. A criminal supposedly executed is brought back to connect with his ancestor during the Spanish Inquisition in an effort to stop violence as a human trait.
His name is Callum Lynch. We've traced his bloodline back 500 years to the Assassin's Creed.
What do you want from me?
Your past. You're about to enter the Animus. What you see, hear, and feel are the memories of your ancestor, who's been dead for 500 years.
Wait a minute!
Welcome to the Spanish Inquisition.
There is kind of an unwritten rule in movie fandom and sci-fi and movies in general in cinema. And that is that movies based on video games are usually terrible. And it has been proved time and time again over decades. They started making movies out of video games as early as the mid-80s. I mean, there's even stuff like The Wizard, which maybe even early 90s. And then, you know, they had Double Dragon. Of course, Mortal Kombat was big. And of course, then they ended up with Doom and Resident Evil. And arguably, there's only two movies that I know of that people would say are good video game adaptations. And that is the original Resident Evil and Mortal Kombat, if you strip off the first Mortal Kombat, if you strip off all the tropes from the 90s. The reason for that is very simple. Video games are premise-based. They give a setup. And the player goes in and plays a relatively open-ended game. I mean, the games can't be focused too narrowly on one path because then it's just boring. Then you're just going through the motions. You've got to be able to discover things for yourself and do things in a different order and go back and figure out the surprises and figure out how to do stuff, maybe how to do things better, and maybe go back and revisit old segments of the game. That's how games are, and they have to work on a premise. And so some of these games have fantastic premises. The problem is that movies are plot and story and character based. The video games don't have very good plots or characters. I mean, they may have characters, but they're somewhat blanks. They're just general archetypal characters that you then put yourself into. And that's what makes them unique. They're two vastly different media. Like the original Resident Evil, I said, is one of the few that is considered a good movie. And part of the reason that works is because it just plays through the premise and then it turns into a zombie film. And then it just goes into zombie tropes from that point on. And that's cool. That's why it works. That's why the Resident Evil first movie felt like an actual movie, because the first half of the film was to set up the premise. And then they just, you know, zombie movies are zombie movies. And that's kind of what it became. But this falls in the same problem that, like, Warcraft fell into. It's overtly simple. Michael Fassbender plays this guy and he can be regressed to the memories of him when he was an assassin during the time of the Spanish Inquisition. I didn't expect the Spanish Inquisition.
Nobody expects the Spanish Inquisition.
So he went back in time and he does that. And the whole reason they're doing that is to find a cure for violence. In one of the most violent movies you're going to see. I don't quite understand what they're doing and how the Knights Templar work into this whole thing. It's so convoluted for such a simple story of this guy going back in time to simply retrieve a MacGuffin, which is this apple of Eden that maybe was given by aliens or an old race or something. I don't know. It's very convoluted, but overtly simple. Got great actors in it. Marion Cotillard's in it too. Jeremy Irons. The problem is it's just a nonsensical movie. And it reminds me a lot of Warcraft, where, I mean, they threw a lot of money into it. It has some cool stunts, if you can see any of it, past the CGI smoke that's covering the movie. But overall, it's a discombobulated mess of a film. In fact, the entire existence of the Spanish Inquisition, their purpose made a lot more sense than this movie did.
Our chief weapon is surprise. Surprise and fear. Fear and surprise are two weapons. Our fear and surprise and ruthless efficiency are three weapons. Our fear and surprise and ruthless efficiency and an almost fanatical devotion to the Pope.
Anyways, I'm going to have to say that Assassin's Creed, no big surprise, totally sucked.
It sucks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk a little bit about why him. James Franco plays an internet billionaire who invites his girlfriend's family to visit him at Christmas and tries to convince her father he can marry her.
Dad, on Christmas Day, I'm going to ask Steffi to marry me, and I'd really like your blessing. Yeah.
No.
Just give me a couple days to win you over. By Christmas morning, you're going to be calling me son. I'm going to be calling you dad.
Don't think that's going to happen.
I think it's going to, Dad.
I know it won't. Yes, sir. Steph, you could be dating anyone. Why Laird?
He makes me really happy.
He is wrapping his tentacles around every member of this family.
This is not someone we want our daughter marrying.
I am going to take this octopus down.
We have seen this kind of movie many times before. I mean, going all the way back to Guess Who's Coming to Dinner. For whatever reason, the father does not approve of the suitor. And they even did a little racial switch back in 10 years ago or so with Ashton Kutcher and Guess Who, where Bernie Mac was the dad. We've seen this before. So it's kind of this similar story. When it comes to a comedy like this, that's okay. You can have a familiar story. You can jump through the same hoops as long as you have some funny stuff along the way. And honestly, this movie does have a lot of funny stuff to it. James Franco is in his element playing the crazy, bonkers person. And Bryan Cranston, who's got a much better film here than he did with The Infiltrator, is great to see on the big screen, and he plays that sort of surly, grumpy old man, and it works. You know, it's essentially a version of Walter White. Imagine if Walter White didn't start cooking meth and had his daughter want to marry an internet billionaire. But this is a fun movie, I have to say. I enjoyed it. There's no redeeming value. The fact that it's coming out at the end of the year, they're not worrying about any awards. It's just, they didn't even worry about comedy awards. I didn't even get contacted for comedy awards on this movie. It's funny. It's stupid, but it's funny. And I have to say, I like the people involved. I mean, you've got Megan Mullally does a great job in sort of a supporting role as the mother. And she plays somebody different than Karen from Will and Grace. Now you've got Zoe Deutsch as the girl, and I'm not quite sold on her yet. She feels like the actress you get when you want to use Ella Fisher, but you realize she's just a little too old to play like a high school kid or an early college kid. Because Ella Fisher's in her 30s now, and she's had kids herself. She's married to Borat. But overall, why him? Like Office Christmas Party, it has no real redeeming value. I mean, it has a kind of a good message, and it's got a sweet story to it. But it's not exactly something that's going to break any molds. It's not overly subversive, but it's funny. It's a check out, and don't take your kids to it because it's very R-rated, but it's extremely hilarious at times. I found myself laughing. And, you know, I'm easy. If you can make me laugh in the movie theater, I'm with you, and I'm there. So I'm going to have to say that Why Him kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Passengers and Sing.
And you choose. We got big news for all of you.
For
Kevin Carr's new horror anthology, 13 Turns, brings you a series of stories inspired by H.P. Lovecraft, Stephen King, The Twilight Zone, and classic gothic horror. A man is trapped, forced to murder himself every day of his unnatural life. Necromancers resurrect two famous figures from history for sport. A beautiful day in an amusement park turns into a murder investigation after a mysterious death on a roller coaster. A researcher in an abandoned prison discovers a portal to another dimension. 13 Turns by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store, and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. And welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies, continuing with the movie reviews. Let's talk about Passengers. This is a new science fiction film, stars Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence. What's interesting is, before I play the trailer, it was one of those movies that I would have expected to get a little bit more buzz, maybe get a little bit more traction. Reminded me a bit of how the lead up to Collateral Beauty was, and we all know what happened there. The thing I was expecting was at least an attempt to show it early, because I'm in the BFCA, which makes me a little bit different than your average critic organization or, you know, something. I'm also in the OFCS and the Central Ohio Film Critics Association. But the thing with the BFCA, the Critics' Choice Movie Awards, is we give out special awards for science fiction, horror, comedy, action. So we get a certain degree of attention for movies that fit those genres. And I would have expected Passengers to maybe get an early screening for science fiction, possibly. I mean, yeah, you've got stuff like Arrival. And you've got Hacksaw Ridge, which ultimately won for action film, even though it's a little bit more of a drama than an overt action movie like a Fast and Furious film. But no, there was just crickets for Passengers. And we knew there was a screening coming up, but it was way past any sort of voting deadline. It was after we gave awards, for crying out loud. So that made me a little bit concerned about this, because in the past, I've gotten comedy and action movies early that are coming out right around Christmas. So I was a little bit cautious going in, and, you know, sometimes cautionary tales are true. During a 120-year trip to another planet, two people wake from hibernation 90 years too early and must deal with being alone as well as to possibly save the ship from peril.
We boarded the Avalon with a destination. 120 years hibernation means we'll wake up in a new century on a new planet. But a year ago, everything changed. Do you know what's going on? Nobody else is awake.
I think something went wrong with the hibernation pods. We woke up too soon. 90 years too soon.
This can't be happening. We have to go back to sleep.
We can't.
First of all, this is a very beautiful looking movie. I mean, it's got two very gorgeous people in it. It's got Chris Pratt and Jennifer Lawrence. Both of them are very easy on the eyes. And the special effects are really good. And there's a certain amount of nods to movies like The Shining. I mean, Michael Sheen plays a robotic bartender in this movie. And his bar looks eerily similar to the bar in the Gold Room from The Shining that Jack Nicholson goes into and gets drunk, even though there should be no alcohol there, where he meets Grady, the old caretaker. And in fact, Michael Sheen himself looks a bit like that bartender. So there's these brilliant little visual Easter eggs in this movie. And from a scope standpoint, it's gorgeous. And the design of the ship is really kind of intriguing. And you see a certain possibility for science behind that. But here's the thing with the development of Passengers. It's one of those scripts that was like, I don't think it was blacklisted. It was just in development hell for years. Nobody could get it out there. And at one point it was supposed to be an action movie. And then they decided to make it more of a love story between these two people trapped on a spaceship for 90 years. Ironically, I'm watching Red Dwarf. I always rewatch Red Dwarf at the end of the year, which is a British TV show about a guy who's the only survivor on a giant mining vessel, and he's 3 million light years from Earth. And he's the only human left in the universe. So I felt a certain kinship to that. But there's two huge, unsurmountable problems to Passengers. The first one is, there's a creepy element to Passengers. And I really don't want to say why, because it is a little bit spoilery. But let's just say that this would be considered a sweet romance to somebody who maybe has a windowless van. You know, maybe that guy in Cleveland who kidnapped that girl and put her in a basement for like 15 years, maybe he would be like seeing this movie and weeping because it was so beautiful in terms of a romance. It's almost offensive how demeaning this is to women and their emotional state and the level of manipulation and emotional manipulation, kind of like Collateral Beauty, the emotional manipulation that takes place in the film. The other problem with it is it's a very linear story. It starts off with this ship flying through space and some asteroids are hitting the heat shield and that causes a problem. And you know everything that happens. There's no mystery to it. Whereas it feels like it could have been like told out of sequence. It could have been actually told as a flashback. In fact, the crew, like Andy Garcia is the captain of the ship. He doesn't speak a doggone word. You don't get Andy, and it's not like Andy Garcia is this huge star right now, but you don't get Andy Garcia to just have a walk-on performance without a single line as the captain of a ship. It feels like this thing was told in flashback because Jennifer Lawrence's character is a writer, and so she's writing this book about her experience on the ship. And it feels like maybe at some point somebody found the book and was reading it later. And that thing at least would have been more interesting because you could have been like, well, what caused somebody to come out of stasis at this point? Well, you know, because you see it happen and then the person comes out of stasis. And there's no surprises. There's no mystery whatsoever. It's just paint by the numbers kind of movie. And like I said, with that setup, it's almost too simple. Or maybe they tried to make it work that way and then they just re-edited it because it didn't test well with audiences and they made it really creepy. In the end, Passengers looks pretty, but it kind of sucks.
It kind of sucks.
Wait a second. I don't like the sound of that.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about Sing. In a city of animals, a koala tries to save his theater by hosting a singing competition, convincing dozens of animals to find their voices.
If you want to become stars and win $100,000, then you better be ready to work harder than you've ever worked in your lives.
Where were you?
I was at a rehearsal.
Dad, I don't want to be in your gang. I want to be a singer.
How did I end up with a son like you?
Music and all the moves and talk to you.
I can sing, but I get so scared.
Come on, be confident. Don't you want this?
Don't let fear stop you from doing the thing you love.
This is such an odd movie because kind of how I said with Assassin's Creed, there's not much of a plot here. They're trying to do, but there's a lot of characters in this. And there's a couple of them that are the main character, like the koala, and there's a pig that's trying to sing, and then there's an elephant that's trying to sing, and there's a gorilla that's trying to sing, and then there's this mouse that's kind of got a side story. It crams a lot of characters to it, so there's really no overall story. It's like American Idol. I consider it Zootopia Idol. And it hinges upon the performances of these animals, which are fantastic. That's actually the best part of this movie. Furry animals and like snails and rabbits singing, Nicki Minaj's Anaconda. And what's funny is you've seen the trailer with the little rabbits.
Oh my gosh. Look at her butt.
Yeah. The look at her butt scene. I found hilarious, but I didn't know what that was from. So I had to look it up. So I'm sitting there one night researching, I'm looking up Nicki Minaj's Anaconda. My wife's like, what are you listening to? And I'm like, it's for work. Just go back to what you were doing. That's the weird world I live in where I'm looking at Nicki Minaj's Anaconda video for research purposes. But that's the best part. I mean, the story's sort of meh. You know, I mean, it's a typical animated film story, but the real push is the performances. That's actually really kind of cool. See a gorilla singing Elton John. That's kind of awesome, actually. The problem that Sing faces is this has been an amazing year for animation. I mean, you have Zootopia. You have Moana. You have Finding Dory. You have Kubo and the Two Strings. I mean, that's not even beginning to talk about something like, say, Jungle Book, which is essentially an animated film, if you really look at it that way. This has been a fantastic year for animation. So Sing kind of falls somewhere in the middle. It's better than Angry Birds and Storks, I'll tell you that. But it's not the breakout hit But I think it's going to do very well over this week. It's sweet. It's fun. It's, you can't go wrong with singing animals. That's really an easy sell. Sort of like Secret Life of Pets, another big animated film. You know, it's an easy sell. But still, I'm going to have to say Sing kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
That's it for this segment. I need to go to a break. When I come back, I'm going to be talking about Denzel Washington's Fences, the box office, and the home cinema roundup. There's something in the woods, something worth killing for. In Kevin Carr's new thriller, Underbrush, four budding scientists work together to discover a secret hidden in the mysterious Kaikman Woods. This dangerous chain of events is kicked off when a student disappears in the woods near a small college. Four graduate students are brought into an abandoned area of the forest for a secretive biological study, which is nothing more than a cover to look into the truth behind the disappearance. Underbrush by Kevin Carr is available now, only $2.99 in the Kindle store and free to borrow with Kindle Unlimited. Welcome back to Fat Guys at the Movies for the big fat Christmas special or holiday special. I'm not going to be worried about being politically correct. Merry Christmas to everybody. Happy Hanukkah. Happy everything. Happy holidays. If everybody can be different religions and different nationalities, everyone can still be fat. And at Fat Guys at the Movies, we welcome all with the bellies and all of the food. And I cannot wait for the holiday food because I'm going to eat until I puke this week. Because that is what Christmas break means to me. Laziness, lying around, and stuffing so much food down my gullet that I may not be able to stand up. Anyways, got one more movie to talk about, and that is Fences. Denzel Washington directs and stars in this adaptation of August Wilson's play about an African-American family dealing with their interpersonal issues.
A man is supposed to take care of his family. It's my duty to take care of you. I owe a responsibility to you. I ain't got to like you. Now, I don't give you everything I got to give you. I give you your life. Now, don't you go through life worrying about whether somebody like you or not. You best be making sure that they're doing right by you. You understand what I'm saying?
Everything that boy do, he do for you.
It's not easy for me to admit that I've been standing in the same place for 18 years.
Well, I've been standing with you.
This is one that I was excited to get the screener for. They did very limited screenings because it had such an odd release schedule. But I got the screener like at Thanksgiving because I needed to, they wanted me to nominate stuff from it. And I nominated Viola Davis and she won the best supporting actress role, and I voted for that. I mean, I thought she was fantastic in the movie, but it was one of those movies. I'm just going to start off by saying it is not my cup of tea. Fences is not the kind of movie that I gravitate towards, nor that I would necessarily like. But I respect the heck out of it. And I respect Denzel Washington as a director. So let's talk about that really first. He made his debut 10 or 15 years ago with Antoine Fisher, which I thought was a fantastic movie. And you never know when a really famous actor makes a directorial debut, how much they actually direct. And that's what I always thought about Angelina Jolie. Was she actually directing or were other people sort of guiding her hand? But this is like the third or the fourth movie he's done. He did The Great Debaters several years ago, which was a fine movie in its own right. And this one's a much smaller film. It's a much more intimate film than either Antoine Fisher or The Great Debaters. But it's based on a play. And as I understand it, on Broadway, Denzel Washington and Viola Davis also were in this play. And a good chunk of the cast is from the original Broadway play. So many times people will think books and movies are so similar. And they think the same thing about plays. But books are books and movies are movies and plays are plays. And they're very different, which is why you sometimes get some really terrible adaptations of each other. Sometimes you get bad adaptations of plays as movies. Sometimes you get bad plays that come from movies, like Carrie the Musical. This feels very theatrical. It feels very grandstandy. The actors feel like they're performing to the back row. And performing to the camera is very different than performing in a theater situation, because as a theater situation, you gotta go all the way to the back row. Ask any actor. There's a lot more subtlety involved in film and cinema. And that's where I do think Denzel Washington hasn't quite ironed out that nuance yet. He's been able to take a screenplay and make a movie out of it, like he did with Antoine Fisher and The Great Debaters, but taking a play, especially one that he was involved in, and making a movie out of it, still really feels very theatrical. But the performances are really good. He's good in it. I mean, he's Denzel. He's kind of playing Denzel, as he does in most of his movies. But it's Viola Davis who's the real star in this. I mean, she's the breakout. She's amazing in this movie. She's one, it's just one of those performances that you can kind of be passively watching, and then you kind of turn your head and you're like, wow, she's like fantastic in this. She's going to win the Oscar. Mark my words. Viola Davis is going to win the Best Supporting Actress Oscar. And this movie is very contentious. It reminds me of these dysfunctional family movies like August Osage County that we had a couple years ago, where it's just the people are nasty to each other. And I don't particularly like that. It's not my cup of tea, but I mean, this is a very popular play. In terms of bringing it to life, I thought it was a fine job. It's just at the core of it, it's not something I particularly like. So I'm going to still say that Fences kind of rocks.
It kind of rocks.
You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. Let's talk about the box office. Obviously, Rogue One won the weekend last week. Now, the thing that's interesting is it did better than I actually thought it was going to. I thought it was like good for $130 million, but holy cats, that thing made $155 million over the weekend. That is a massive number. Now, in this era of $200 million opening weekends for stuff like Jurassic World and The Avengers, people don't think that a number like $155 million is impressive, especially last year when Star Wars opened to like almost $250 million. But here's the thing, and this is why it was such a failure, that dumped Star Wars campaign. Just take The Force Awakens out of the equation. And the reason The Force Awakens was going to do better is, first of all, it's the very first Star Wars movie that was original of this continuing, this franchise. It was the first one. So it was always going to do better. Anything that comes after it isn't going to top it right away. But not only that, this is a side story. So it was a little hard for people to understand where it fell in the chronology, even though it really wasn't hard to understand. But it was never going to reach the level of The Force Awakens. So the fact that it didn't make $250 million is not a mark against it. It made $155 million in December. The reason that's significant is if you look at the next closest movie, if you talk December openings, the next closest movie to make the December box office record was The Hobbit, An Unexpected Journey, with $85 million. Then he had stuff like I Am Legend and Avatar with 77. So right around there, in the 70s and the 80s, that's sort of the top end. This thing almost broke it by a factor of two. In fact, if you take the average, which is like probably about 75 million, it doubled the average big number for opening weekend in December. Doubled it. This is a huge movie. It is a massive movie. And it's not episode 8. And that's a big deal. That means the dump Star Wars campaign was a massive failure on all fronts. And that means that it shows that Disney knows what it's doing. It's making these movies and it's marvelizing these movies, which is good. Because we're going to get them around for a while. And I love Star Wars, so I can't wait to see more. When Collateral Beauty, as you probably expected, Collateral Beauty sank like a stone and made just over $7 million, which is putrid in terms of Will Smith and his box office record. In fact, if you look at his opening, there are only two movies he has done that have made less money in opening weekend. And this is including like cameos in Winter's Tale and Jersey Girl. This is the third from the bottom, up there with Where the Day Takes You, which came out back in 1992. That made a sum total of $390,000 in the theaters. And 6 Degrees of Separation, which came out in 1993. You have to go to the beginning of Will Smith's career before he even broke out of Fresh Prince to have a movie do this poorly on opening weekend. Concussion last year did better. This was a flop of epic proportion for Will Smith. There's a come to Jesus meeting going on between Will Smith and his agent and the people around him, because he's like, what is going on? My legacy and my acting is not getting taken seriously, but you get me to put on a suit and do action movies like Suicide Squad, and it does well. That's not what he wants. Will Smith doesn't want Suicide Squad. He wants an Oscar. Now, this week, I think Rogue One's good for about $75 million. If you talk like the whole from Wednesday to Sunday, $75 million. And I think Singh's going to lead the newcomers. And it's going to be chomping at the heels of Rogue One, but I don't think it's going to crack 75. I mean, it's Rogue One's going to take advantage exactly as The Force Awakens did. It's going to take advantage of the whole holiday frame. And even though the hunger for Star Wars isn't quite there as it was last year, it's still there, and it's going to do incredibly well. You're listening to Fat Guys at the Movies with Kevin Carr. That sound means it's time to roll into the Home Cinema Roundup. Real quick, I'm almost running out of time. I got to do these real fast. We've got The Magnificent Seven with Passengers Chris Pratt. You've got Rob Zombie's 31, which is a terrible movie, but if you like the Rob Zombie, you might enjoy it. You've got Hillsong, Let Hope Rise, the movie about the megachurch. Greater, which is about football, sort of a faith-based football movie. Hairspray Live from television, and Doctor Who Season 8, Part 2, just in time for the Doctor Who Christmas special coming up this weekend. That is it. I need to go. Merry Christmas to everybody out there. Happy holidays. And next week, I'll be talking about the best and worst of 2016. Until then, have a fat time at the movies.